It's 4:33, and you're listening to KDNK. It's time for Valley Voices. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host, and my guest today is Ginger Catherines, award-winning filmmaker, longtime wild horse advocate, and director of the Cloud Foundation. Welcome back to the show, Ginger.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really great to hear your voice.
You as well.
Thanks. Can you give us an update on the nation's wild horses, like how many are on the range right now and how many are in holding facilities?
I think there's the BLM is estimating 80,000 on the range, and that sounds like more than what our numbers come up with. And then in holding, there's over 50,000 wild horses in holding facilities or long-range pastures.
Well, you know, you just mentioned that the numbers that you have are different than the BLM estimations. And, you know, the BLM uses fixed-wing aircraft and computer modeling to project the amount of horses and burros on the range. And over the years, as you mentioned, there have been many discrepancies between, you know, the BLM numbers and other counts. Can you talk about that and how accurate the current BLM census models are?
Well, I think that the BLM censusing models are better than they used to be. A lot of these are done with helicopter. And if it is fixed wing, they have two observers, one on each side, and do it a mark, remark, or double count. They match their numbers up and fly in both directions and do quadrants. And I think those are pretty accurate, but it isn't accurate if you don't do it. What BLM does is they'll just multiply 20% onto, let's say, last year to this year, they just add 20%. And figure that that's the foaling rate, which is that's very high foaling rate in the prior mountains where, as you know, I've spent a lot of time. That foaling rate was in years past around 8%. So we don't really know, to answer your question. I don't think they know, and I don't think we know. But if they just apply these statistics and come up with false numbers, But they're trying to make it sound like there are as many wild horses as possible.
Right.
And, of course, they set this ridiculous, agency-wide number of 21,000 or something that they want to have in the whole system.
Well, that's the appropriate management level, or AML, right?
Yeah, otherwise known as the inappropriate.
Inappropriate management level.
And now, of course, there's a huge problem in Wyoming because the current BLM director lost a lawsuit to try to get rid of the herds in the checkerboard land.
Can you talk about what checkerboard lands are for those who don't know?
Sure. When the railroads came through in the 1800s, they purchased every other square mile of land that would be public land, and then it's checkerboarded on 20 miles north of I-80 and 20 miles south of I-80. Hmm. And although now it's a freeway more than a railroad, the railroads were the ones that set this up, and of course the states went along with it. Mm-hmm. And it's created a nightmare because BLM has never done the hard work of trying to consolidate these public lands into something other than this unmanageable checkerboard. Mm-hmm. And wild horses don't know public from private. There is, for the most part, there are no fences. And so there are several hundred nearly 2 million acres that we're talking about.
Wow.
That have Wyoming's major wild horse herds on these lands.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to remove them all.
They want to remove them all. What why? What is the BLM's reason?
Well, it's an interesting tangled web, but yeah. The Rock Springs Grazing Association in Rock Springs, Wyoming, is the most powerful grazing association in the country. And they hired the Mountain States Legal Foundation here in Denver. And their attorneys, including William Perry Tenley, who's now the head of BLM, he was a lawyer for this Mountain States Legal Foundation. And in 2014, he was the attorney who filed suit to get rid of the horses in the checkerboard.
And he's now the head of the BLM, or the acting head of the BLM.
Yes. And he lost that case. We won that case in 2014. So he's back again, except now, unfortunately, he's in charge of the Bureau of Land Management.
You know, in the most recent issue of the Cloud Foundation, the Cloud Action News, your newsletter, you mentioned one of the issues that you guys talk about is livestock grazing and cows on the range and Mustangs in the wild. And you mention a bill that's been introduced into Congress. It's H.R. 5737, also known as the Voluntary Grazing Permit Retirement Act.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Well, there's a congressman, Adam Smith, who's out of Washington State, I believe. He has been introducing this on and off for a long time to try to retire grazing allotments. And unfortunately, he's not been successful at all. You know, the taxpayer ends up paying every year, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars because of the loss in revenues from public lands grazing. Right now, the ranchers can put their livestock on our public lands at a cost of $1.35 per month per cow-calf pair. $1.35. It's the lowest legal limit. You can't go any lower than $1.35. It was in the Obama administration, it was up over $2, but still it's over $2. It's just a huge money loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's 2.7% of public lands ranchers make up 2.7% of the production. 2.7%.
And that's not much. And how many cows has the Cloud Foundation and the American Wild Horse Preservation Campaign, how many cows have you estimated are on public lands compared to wild horses and burros?
Well, there's probably 2 to 3 million head of livestock on public lands. And so, I mean, it's just a huge difference between livestock. Now, livestock are on more lands because wild horses are only a small percentage of public lands and seem to be a lot smaller acreages. But it's a boondoggle. I mean, that the public lands ranchers are propped up by the NRA and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. But back on this Wyoming deal that's in our backyard here, the BLM is going to have public meetings, and so people can go to Rock Springs and Rawlins, and we can let you know when those meetings will be. I talked to BLM today, and they said March 5th and March 11th, March 5th in Rock Springs and March 11th in Rawlins. So I'm hoping that people will go to these informational meetings. They probably won't be able to make a speech, but you will talk one-on-one with the managers of these lands. And I think it would be helpful if the public stood up for our wild horses.
No kidding. You know, I want to get back to the Voluntary Grazing Permit Retirement Act for just a second. Is this specifically to help wild horses and burros? Because it, you know, according to what Cloud Action News says, it would allow ranchers to work with advocates to voluntarily retire grazing permits and have those forage allocations be transferred for use by wild horses, burros, and other wildlife. That's really sort of a forward-thinking proposal.
Yeah, and it's been forward-thinking for about 10 years. It's at least 10 years that he's worked on trying to get this through. It would benefit the land. None of the wildlife can live on public lands. It's trash. And a lot of our public lands are trashed by these millions of head of cows. They camp out by the water sources and they poop in the water and they don't move very far, and it's not their fault. They have a digestive system that requires that they rest, and they lay around and chew their cud and poop, and they lay around water because they're not like wild horses that will move many miles in a day. They just kind of hang out and trash the areas around water sources.
Well, it's interesting.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's interesting because the ranchers say the same about the wild horses and natural springs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
So,
and, you know, it is not that my horse is a big animal. Mm-hmm. And I've watched them for over 20 years now, up close and personal. And, you know, when they come to a water source and if it's damp, you know, they'll slide, their hooves will slide in and so forth. But because of their social structure also, they don't just hang out in one place. Mm. Wild horses live in family groups, as you know, all bands. And they move around their environment. They don't hang out in one place. Because of their social structure and they're in these family groups, a stallion doesn't want his mares to be too close for too long to another band. And so these bands kind of, they space themselves out naturally. And it creates less damage than when you have a herd of cattle and they're a herd animal. And they all, like, you know, there can be hundreds of them at one time or thousands that move in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just naturally more damaging.
Well, I want to remind listeners, it's 4:46. You're listening to Valley Voices here on KDNK. And my guest is Ginger Catherines, world-renowned wild horse advocate, an award-winning filmmaker and director of the Cloud Foundation based in Colorado Springs. You know, speaking of bands and behavior and all that, the Republican administration's 2021 budget, which was released this week, is pushing for something really strange, in my opinion. It's pushing for castration, ovarectomies, and other in-the-wild sterilization methods for wild horses. And other than what appear to be very painful and dangerous procedures, talk about the problem and how that would impact the Mustang's behavior.
Well, the band structure would be shattered if the mare could even survive what they want to do. And we have been successful in legally stopping these, and universities have felt the public pressure because universities have been involved with, like CSU, that was going to partner with BLM to do trial ovarectomies where an instrument that looks like a bicycle chain is thrust into the rear end of the mare, and blindly they crush and then pull out the ovary. So it's a very dangerous procedure. And CSU got so much bad publicity that they backed out of it. OSU, Oregon State University, got so much bad publicity and people really went through the roof that they backed out of it. But BLM keeps plowing ahead with these permanent sterilization methods that would destroy wild horse band structure. And if you have geldings and if you have mares that can't reproduce, you really don't have wild horses anymore.
Right.
I mean, their society is what makes them so fascinating to me. I mean, I've documented, as you know, in the Prairie Mountains and elsewhere for over 20 years, and it is just endlessly fascinating. It's a learning experience every time you visit. And I strongly encourage your listeners to take a trip to a wild horse herd and see if you can get close enough and sit around, if it's summertime, sit around a water source. And, you know, if you're quiet, you know, watch them trail in, and it'll be family by family. And they'll come in and they'll drink, and then they'll leap, and then another family will come in. And the strongest family, like Cloud had with such a powerful bandstand, he might hang out a little longer at the water than the bandstand that was more paranoid about having his mirror stolen by somebody like Cloud. Mm-hmm. So if you take away their ability to reproduce, if you don't kill them in the process, then you don't really have wild horses anymore.
Mm-mm. No, you don't. Because there, I mean, what would happen to the social structure? You know, wouldn't be a social structure. And, you know, I'm just, how close do you think, I mean, before I ask that question, whatever happened to PZP, which was, you know, a fertility control drug that is still used in at least two herds in Colorado, in the Sandwash and the Spring Creek herds. And that there was a huge controversy at least a decade ago, but some herds seem to be doing well on it. What are your thoughts about PCP?
I wasn't a supporter because in the Friars, they wanted to use it when they had active mountain lion predation that was naturally managing the herd. And the BLM, because they wanted to use the Friars as a trial balloon, they called in mountain lion hunters and they killed the mountain lion. So the natural system, the natural system was destroyed. And after that, PZP has been effective in the Friars. It's been effective in Spring Creek. That little herd hasn't had any removals in a very long time, at least a decade. And in other places, it works really well. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of new exciting science. A friend of ours is working on stations that would have food in them where there would be a reader, and every animal would be microchipped that reaches their head down to get the food. It's just fascinating, a visual a recognition system.
Wow.
And so you wouldn't even have to touch the animals, but they would receive a dose of PZP, and that's been proven to be very safe, and it works.
Who's studying that? Who's doing that research?
Rock Hart is the name of the guy in New Mexico who is doing this, and he's working with the Sandia Labs. If anybody knows the Sandia Labs, we're instrumental in all kinds of science projects for the government. Mm. I mean, really big projects. And so they've partnered with him, and it's his brainchild. It is high tech to the max.
Hmm. It sounds like it's fairly non-invasive, at least not as much as the sort of medieval sounding chain ovarectomy.
Yeah, the chain ecrasure. It's called an ecrasure.
It's
yeah,
horrible.
Yeah, this is just unacceptable to the public. I can't. I can't imagine them successfully doing it, but I just was reading the environmental assessment for a herd called Swayze in Utah, and I have a Swayze Mustang, and I adopted him in 2013 at the last roundup, and this has all kinds of hideous stuff in it that they're analyzing. I mean, all kinds of, you know, trial balloons on taking ovaries out and doing all kinds of horrible things.
I thought animal abuse was illegal in the United States now.
You thought what?
I thought animal abuse was illegal.
Oh, yeah, really, really. Well, you know, the vast majority of Americans, I think 92% on a poll are opposed to anything like this. So it's wildly unpopular.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, Ginger Catherine's, which is always...
Oh, no, can't have gone that fast.
I know, it goes fast. Well, I was a little late getting on. I just couldn't get the phone to cooperate. But I want to talk briefly about the proposed changes to the National Environmental Policy Act that you and I were talking about the other evening. And these changes, which would include fast-tracking projects and reducing opportunities for public comments on projects, you know, appears to threaten many different kinds of projects on public lands. And I'm wondering if you can give us a brief comment on how, if we didn't have NEPA and public opportunities to respond to projects or participate in projects, what would happen to the wild horses?
They'd be gone.
Why?
Well, if the public can't comment on the actions of the BLM and they don't have to meet the standards of the National Environmental Policy Act, they'll run roughshod over our public lands. And I'm not, you know, NEPA is so critical in being a bulwark of something that you can sue on, that you can try to stop this destruction, that when you remove NEPA or remove certain parts of NEPA, you pull the rug out from under environmental groups that are trying to preserve the last of the best. It's the Center for Biological Diversity and Western Watersheds and all these organizations, the COG Foundation, we all depend on NEPA. That it would be a disaster. But this administration, we are not a political, we can't take political sides, but we have to be realistic. This is a very dangerous administration to anything wild, wild lands, any wild animals. And then we know on many other fronts, it's not good.
Well, we've got about a minute left here, and if this were a perfect world, what would be the ideal scenario for wild horse and burrow management?
If this was my ideal world,
yeah.
I would consolidate, if, for instance, in Wyoming, central Wyoming, and make a huge commons for wildlife that would include wild horses. And we would take the horses from the checkerboard land, and we would allow them to roam with Stewart Creek, with Lost Water, with these other central Wyoming areas, because central Wyoming is just the grandest habitat for wild horses. And so in each state, we would have a common area where wild horses and wildlife would be protected. In these large, unfenced, beautiful areas that people could come and see, you know, the full panorama, the full palette of wildlife.
Not a certain.
That would be my wish list.
Well, Ginger Catherine's director of the Cloud Foundation, award-winning filmmaker and lifelong wild horse advocate, thanks very much for taking the time to talk with me today, and I'll have you on again, and we'll continue the conversation.
That would be great. Thank you for the opportunity. We really appreciate it.
All right. Take care. You've been listening to Valley Voices. My guest was Ginger Catherine's, director of the Cloud Foundation. It's 4:57. Next up, Pulse of the Planet.